Welcome to this Labor Day weekend edition of What Matters in North Carolina. It's Friday, and we're hoping that you have great Labor Day weekend plans here in North Carolina. Be careful as the now weakened tropical storm Hermine, or Hermine as some people have said, goes across the state, and hopefully it will not do too much damage in its path. So we always would like to invite you to join us on Twitter. You can connect with us there at WhatMattersNC. It would be our pleasure to engage with you in that social media venue. We're also on Facebook as well. Some of the top stories continue to be the voter ID fallout from the Supreme Court not issuing a stay in North Carolina's case, staying the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals decision. And so, as you probably know by now, the voter ID will not be required in the upcoming election. WBTV Television in Charlotte is reporting that Texas has filed a brief in support of North Carolina's restroom law, otherwise known as HB2. Texas and a dozen other states, the story says, are asking a federal judge in North Carolina to side with Republican leaders defending a law governing transgender restroom access. The group behind the brief that was filed Wednesday largely overlaps with states that won a ruling last week against the Obama administration guidelines on transgender restroom access in schools. So this case continues to draw attention. It continues to be interesting, and a lot of people are holding their breath and hoping for a decision one way or another. The gay rights and transgender advocates would hope that House Bill 2 would be struck down. And, of course, those who care about the safety of women and children, little girls, and just common sense are hoping that House Bill 2 will be upheld. We will keep you posted on that as this thing evolves and progresses through the courts. There's been some changes in the North Carolina General Assembly. We've talked to you about those through the last couple of months as senators have departed, Senator Apodaca, Senator Rucho. We've seen House members depart, those who have resigned during this interim time when they're not in session, and those who have decided not to run again. Our show today will feature that topic, and we're also going to talk about the rising popularity of school choice and why it is in big demand here in North Carolina. The resignation from his seat as a representative in the North Carolina House left a big spot to fill, as Representative Mike Hager was also the House Majority Leader. The House Republicans got together a few days ago and elected Representative John Bell to be their new Majority Leader, and replacing Representative Bell as the House Majority Whip is Representative Dean Arp from Union County. Joining us now on What Matters in North Carolina is Representative John Bell. He represents the fine folks in Craven, Green, Lenoir, and Wayne counties, and is the brand new House Majority Leader. Representative Bell, welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina.
Thank you for having me on today.
Well, it certainly is our pleasure, and I hope you have a nice Labor Day weekend planned, although this rain might dampen, so to speak, some of those plans.
We'll you know, at least I don't have to cut the grass this afternoon because it's been raining. So I'll wait for everything to dry out before we do that. But it's going to be nice to spend a little time with my family. And my daughter has her second birthday on Labor Day, so we're looking forward to a big weekend.
Oh, absolutely. Well, happy birthday to her. I know that's going to be a special day. Representative Bell, first of all, let me say congratulations on your being elected by your fellow Republicans in the House as their new Majority Leader.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a, it's an honor to serve in the General Assembly, and only 120 people across the state of North Carolina get to serve in the House. Everybody in them, and, it's just an honor that folks elect you to do that. It's a great honor that the folks that are elected to services of the state elect you to a leadership position to lead the charge for the Republican caucus and conservative values here in North Carolina. And I'm very proud. I'm very honored that my colleagues did that this week. And that they put a lot of trust in me. And I'm fairly confident I can deliver and look forward to working with every single one of them.
Well, absolutely. They placed a great deal of confidence in you. I know that has to feel exceptionally good. So how do you see your role changing from having served as the House Majority Whip to now the House Majority Leader?
Well, right now, it's a different role that the Majority Leader plays, and right now, it'd be my job to make sure that we do everything in our power to maintain our supermajorities and to add to that, along with spreading the message that of what we've done in the General Assembly over not just the last 2 years, but what we've done the last 6 years, and how we've fundamentally changed North Carolina through sound fiscal policy for the better. And working with our current members running for re-election, working with our candidates that we joined us in the General Assembly, and making sure that we hold their supermajorities going into the 2017 session. Once we're successful in doing that, then we come back in, lay out the caucus agenda, and see what the caucus wants to accomplish going into the long session, and then we move from a campaign role into a governing role. And so I look forward to doing that. And of course, we've already put those wheels in place, and we're moving forward.
Our guest on What Matters in North Carolina is the new North Carolina House Majority Leader, Representative John Bell. On that same thought, Representative Bell, it's got to be difficult to find the time not only to take care of your business in your district, but now also get out and help other candidates as they try to, you know, run their races in different parts of the state.
Yeah, that was... Of course, being the whip, I was responsible for getting that message out as well, and I'm very blessed to work for a company, North Carolina Community Federal Credit Union here in Goldsboro, that allows me the flexibility to be able to do my role here at the credit union, but also handle my responsibilities in the General Assembly. And of course, most importantly, I have a very understanding family that supports me and works with me. And without that family structure in place, and without them jumping in the car with me and going to events or attending events when I can't be there in my place, without that family structure in place, I couldn't do what I do. So I'm very blessed to be able to have that structure in place, which has helped make me successful in the General Assembly, because it is important. And a lot of your listeners need to understand that. We need good people serving in the General Assembly. We need people to understand what it's like to work for a living. We need people to understand the struggles that burdensome regulations place on our companies and small businesses and growing. We need to understand that when families look down at their checkbooks and the income's decreasing because jobs have left, they need to be able to just understand how everyday life works. And so I'm very, very fortunate to be able to have this opportunity, and hopefully it would entice other folks and other companies to say, hey, we need to put our best and brightest forward and allow them to run for office, because that's the way we make North Carolina a better state.
Well, it sounds like you certainly have your plate full, absolutely. But as you have talked about the state of things in North Carolina, from my position, things seem to be going along on the right track. You've lowered taxes and been able to balance the budget and have not only a revenue surplus, but a reduction in spending, putting money away into the rainy day fund. And how is it that this message seems to be so difficult to get out to people across the state? You know, the media is no friend, certainly, of the House leadership or the Senate leadership. It seems like a real challenge to spread the good news.
It is a challenge. Just like you mentioned, we have a wonderful story to tell of what's happened in North Carolina over the last 6 years. And visitor spending is up in North Carolina over 3% last year. Taxes are dropping in North Carolina. Business industry is moving into North Carolina. Businesses are expanding in North Carolina. More people are working. We have a budget surplus. On a projection, if you look at what we've been able to do by paying back our $2.7 billion debt owed to the federal government through unemployment insurance, working with our small businesses to make that happen, and then the rainy day fund, if we would ever experience what our friends in Louisiana have experienced, we could actually be prepared as a state to handle that. These are great stories, and the media is not our friend. A lot of times, We let political talking points and agendas get in the way of actually telling the truth of what's going on in North Carolina. And that's part of our job. I've encouraged all of our members and I work with my members to get out and go talk to Chamber of Commerce and local areas, go talk to local newspapers, and do everything we possibly can to get our message out. And we've been doing that, but we need help with that. I always believe that the media told an unbiased story about what was really happening, and we have learned over the last number of years that's not always the case. But we know that, and now we've got to fight it and do what we can do to tell the truth to plenty of North Carolinians that, we have the 9th largest economy in the country, the 23rd largest economy in the world. North Carolina is heading in the right direction, and I'm very happy of the work we've done. But we can't stop here. This is just the beginning. We have to continue till we get those number one rankings on everything. We want to be the most friendly place to do business, and not just in the country, but in the world. We want to have the best tax climate in the country. We want it to be to where when people, they don't even have to think about where they're going. They want to come to North Carolina to live, work, and worship.
Well, absolutely. The story is good, and encourage yourself and others there to, and we're doing our part to bring the truth, every day to those that listen, that certainly the GOP majority in the North Carolina General Assembly, along with Governor McCrory, have been doing a great job. The state is certainly much better off than it was at the end of 2010. Our guest here is Representative John Bell. He is the new majority leader in the North Carolina House. And this might be a bit of a touchy question, but some folks, not many, but some have been a little critical of your election as the majority leader, saying that perhaps you're not as conservative as folks would like for you to be. Representative Hager stood up to the more moderate leadership of Speaker Moore and Representatives Lewis and Dollar and fought for some more, I don't know, conservative things like ending solar subsidies. How would you respond to those that might say that Representative Bell might not be as conservative as some folks would like for you to be?
I would like for those folks to sit down and talk with me for 5-10 minutes, and they would realize that is not the case at all. If you go back and look at one of the first major pieces of legislation that I ran was the wind permitting process for the state of North Carolina. We had a situation where you look at wind turbines, renewable energy tax-funded, taxpayer-funded wind turbines that were trying to shut down our military bases. That was a critical piece of legislation we put in place, and we're able to back a lot of these wind subsidies that were put in place and limit to where these windmills can go because we sure can't lose over a $55 billion economic impact to our state, which is our military. And that's a tough pill to swallow for me because I do believe I'm conservative. Am I reasonable? Yes. Am I willing to negotiate and try to find a happy place where everybody can work together and all sides walk away okay? Yes, absolutely. That's how the General Assembly works. 120 of us in that building are not always going to agree on every single thing. But I do have my principles and morals and values that have guided me, not as the majority leader now, but have guided me since I started in the political process and even before I got to the political process. So there's always going to be naysayers out there. There's always going to be people I've learned that you can't make happy. But I feel like I've got a good record in the General Assembly. I feel like I have a conservative record in the General Assembly. And if those folks would like to sit down and talk to me and look at issues and address those issues, I'd be more than happy to do that.
Well, that sounds certainly fair enough to me. Our guest, Representative John Bell, here on What Matters in North Carolina, the new majority leader in the North Carolina House. Two questions, just kind of a nostalgic, because I've never asked you this before. What made you throw your hat in the ring, Representative Bell? You were sitting around one day or driving around. Maybe somebody was talking to you and you thought, I'm going to run for the House. What prompted you to get involved in serving the people as a member of the House of Representatives?
Well, I've always enjoyed politics. I always followed politics. And in 2007, 2008, a good friend of mine, County Commissioner Efton Sager, was running for the House of Representatives. He was going to run the open seat that at the time Representative Lewis Pate was going to run for the Senate. And so we talked, and I actually ran his campaign back in 2008 to go to the House of Representatives, and we were successful. In 2010, Representative Lewis Pate came to me and said, look, I was an opportunity to be a part of history and take a majority in the state Senate. Would you help me with my campaign? And I ran Senator Lewis Pate's campaign in 2010 and caught the bug from there. And so I was active in our local party here as the vice chairman for two terms. And I had a group of folks come to me and said, the district's got withdrawn and we're not happy with our representation. Would you consider running for office? And, of course, my first response was, you're absolutely crazy. Why would I do that? I've got other things I've got to do, business-wise, and I'm starting a career and moving forward. But, you know, I thought about it, and I talked with my family about it, and I prayed about it. And everywhere I turned, it said run. And so I took a chance and put a message out there, and it resonated with the voters in the District 10, and we were successful. And so and now I'm running for my third term, and we continue being accessible. We're constantly visible in the district. We're constantly talking to people. We're traveling all over the district doing those things that got selected in the beginning, and now we're able to do that not just in our district, but do it all across the state of North Carolina to spread the message on what we've done and who we are and why North Carolina is better with a Republican majority.
Representative Bell, just following up on that, you indicated that you're finishing your second term, running for a third. Your path to leadership has been fairly quick, rather remarkable. To what might you attribute your success, at not just being a House member, but being able to step in and be a part of the House leadership in really such a relatively short period of time?
Well, if you look at the Republican majority in the House, it's changed very, very rapidly. And even in my second term, I find myself as one of the senior members in the General Assembly.
Wow!
You look at going into the next term when you have longtime leaders like Representative Roger West, Representative Leo Daughtry, Representative J.H. Lincoln, those core staple Republicans that have been in the General Assembly for a number of years, they're no longer there, and so it's provided opportunities for younger members, or I would say newer members in the House to take over these leadership positions. I think my colleagues understand that I'm reasonable. I'm willing to work with every single one of them, and I listen and I care. I know that what works in Deep Run and Pink Hill and Kinston in my district may not work in downtown Charlotte. What works in downtown Charlotte sure doesn't work in the Rosewood community where I'm from. And so learning how to work together and listen and have an understanding of how diverse our state is, but have a set of core values and a solid mission in front of us, it is part of what I bring to the table. And I hope that the members of our caucus have seen that, and that's why they have elected me to this position.
Our guest, Representative John Bell, the new House Majority Leader here on What Matters in North Carolina. Can you give us, Representative Bell, a sense of your leadership style? Will you be doing things differently as the Majority Leader than the way you carried out your responsibilities as the Majority Whip?
Well, it's a different role. One of the things that I have done is I have reached out to past Majority Leaders. And got a good understanding on how they did things and listened and learned from them and took advice from them. And of course, all of them say, make it your own and do what you feel is right. But I think a big part of what's made me who I am is that I'm very approachable. I'm willing to listen and I work hard. I firmly believe that we're doing the right things here in North Carolina, and it's my job to make sure that every member in our caucus not only is successful but has every bit of information that they need to be able to get out in the communities and their districts and clearly communicate on what we're doing, but also the information so they can make informed decisions. Because when we make a decision in the General Assembly, when I press that red button or green button, it's not my decision. I represent around 80,000 people just like every other member in the House does. And so we're making decisions that affect over 80,000 lives every time we press that button. And when you take it into that perspective, you realize the responsibility and the honor it is to be that voice. And so it's my job as a majority leader to make sure that our members have every information, bit of information in front of them, to not only be able to clearly communicate what we're doing, but make the right decision for 80,000+ people that rely on them to be their voice.
Absolutely. Well, Representative Bell, you'd mentioned at the beginning of our time together that trying to maintain the supermajority in the House is certainly a goal that yourself and the other members of the House leadership have at this point. There have been pundits who have said that that's going to be a really tough task, that there are some seats, possibly as many as 7 or 8, that are really going to be difficult for the Republicans to maintain. Do you really realistically feel like you guys can hold on to that supermajority? Go ahead. Yeah,
we're going to do everything in our power to be able to do that. I'm a fighter, and I like to work hard and be successful. And our members all are on the same page. We're not going to give up a seat. We're not going to concede a seat. We're going to fight for every inch of ground that we have. And a big part of that is me getting on talk shows and interviews and talking what we're doing right now, because we have to clearly communicate to the voters what we've done. That when we came into the General Assembly, you had a $3 billion deficit. You had a $600 million shortfall in Medicaid. Our regulations were completely out of control. We had the highest tax rate in the Southeast. Now let's look at where we're at today. In just 6 short years, look at where we're at today. North Carolina has consistently been labeled as the best place to do business. People want to come to North Carolina. Our population is growing. And the folks who don't live in North Carolina want to come visit North Carolina because of the climate that this Republican majority has created over the last 6 years. And so we've got to clearly communicate that. And when you do that, people understand it and they get it. And it's our job to get out there and fight for every single seat, to maintain that supermajority. And we're going to do our best to make sure that supermajority holds. Is it going to be tough? Absolutely. We have probably, and everyone says this, but we have the greatest election of our lifetime is right now. We have two fundamentally different directions that this country and our state can go in. And the voters are going to have to choose on where they want North Carolina to go and where they want this country to go. And when you're looking at a ticket that starts at the presidential level and goes all the way down to the county commission levels and so forth, look at what's going on with our court system now. We have a court system that wants to be more of a legislative branch, and they actually do be a court system. These are issues that North Carolinians are going to have to choose which direction they go. And I think once they hear their story, not only will they support what our Republican majority has done, but they'll support our conservative judges, and we'll continue to move forward. But this is going to be a battleground state. You're going to have a tremendous amount of outside money coming into North Carolina. But if people sit home and do not go vote, we're going to be in trouble. But if people do go vote and people say, you know, hey, I like the direction we're going, at the end of the day, I think we're going to be very successful.
Our guest, Representative John Bell, the new House Majority Leader in the North Carolina House of Representatives, here on What Matters in North Carolina. Since you mentioned it, my final question, Representative Bell, and certainly want to thank you for being our guest. How difficult do you perceive what they call the Trump effect in terms of being able to get the local message out? You know, hey, folks, this is what we've done. This is where North Carolina is, you know, versus trying to deal with all the noise that, as you said, is going to come along with all the money that's going to come into the state, the distractions that could possibly represent. That's got to be a big challenge.
It is, and what we've communicated to our members is that if there was ever an election that the grassroots movement was as important, it is this one. We're going to have to knock on doors. We're going to have to talk to people face-to-face. We're going to have to talk to local news media. We're going to have to get out and beat the pavement. We're going to have to work election polls. And clearly, eye-to-eye, hand-to-hand combat, talk to the citizens of the state to clearly communicate what we have done in this Republican majority. You know, I've already seen the TV ads and said the Republican majority did this, this, and this, and I'm like, well, you know, that's just not exactly true, or not even close to being true. So there's going to be an effort there to try to completely change the narrative on what's going on in North Carolina. I was at an event at the beginning of the week, and we had a Democrat member there on our panel that said, yes, all these numbers dealing with the state budget and the good things are happening in North Carolina, they're all correct, but other people would tell it a different story about how bad we're doing. And that's the attitude that these outside entities are going to have. They're going to take the facts and push them aside and tell the narrative that they want to tell. The narrative they want to tell is one of higher taxes, higher regulations. The narrative they want to tell is what put us in the hole that we found ourselves in when we walked in the door in 2010. They don't want to talk about the good things that are going on right now because they can't. Because when you put facts out there, facts speak for themselves. And our Republican majority has done a wonderful job, and we're going to continue to move forward. And I look forward to great things out of this majority in the future.
Representative John Bell, we certainly will do our part here on What Matters in North Carolina to communicate simply the truth of what's been going on in North Carolina. And from where I sit, there's been a lot of good that has taken place under the Republican leadership in both the North Carolina House and the North Carolina Senate. The new majority leader in the House, Representative Bell, thanks for being our guest, as always, on What Matters in North Carolina.
Thank you very much, and look forward to speaking with you in the future.
Well, we certainly appreciate Representative Bell being our guest. We are widening the net, casting the net wide, and finding many members of the North Carolina General Assembly gladly coming on What Matters in North Carolina. We appreciate their time and their willingness to be candid with some of the tough questions that we're asking, and always appreciative of their time. On the other side, we're going to talk with Daryl Allison about the rising popularity of school choice here in North Carolina. We're going to take a quick timeout, and we'll be right back. You're listening to What Matters in North Carolina.
What time is it? Well, it's either time for a beer or time to turn on the Free to Brew podcast. Just like your color TV and the internet, craft beer is not going away anytime soon. Tune in to the show for a free market perspective on the latest in beer news, regulations, and why the brewing industry has more to do with North Carolina politics than you realize. We tackle the distribution cap, taxes, food trucks, labeling, packaging, and anything I can possibly get away with. Try out the latest podcast on your drive home today. That's the Free to Brew Show with me, your host, Greg Polsher. At the end of the day, you can't have beer without liberty, and you can't have liberty without beer.
Welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina. And over the weekend, there was a big article plastered on the front page of the News and Observer. More Wake County families opt against traditional public schools. And the issue of school choice in North Carolina is one that is growing. The demand definitely seems to be surging over the past few years, and it's a topic that we'd like to talk about now with someone who is really expert on the subject and right smack dab in the middle of the school choice movement in North Carolina. Our guest is Daryl Allison. He is the president of Parents for Educational Freedom in North Carolina. Daryl, welcome to What Matters in North Carolina.
Hey, Mark, thank you for having me. It's good to be with you and your listeners.
Well, let's just jump right in. School choice seems to be something that is front and center on the minds of a lot of parents in North Carolina these days. To what might you attribute this growing demand for options that are outside of the traditional public school route for many families?
You know, it's a great question, Mark, and you don't want to generalize per se, but when you really think back, and we've traveled a state, we've met with many of these families. You know, I think you could probably paint it like this: when you are wealthy in America, particularly in North Carolina, you can afford to exercise multiple options as as relates to finding that education that's going to work best for your child. And that's not to demonize that family. Hey, we all would like to have a few extra dollars in the pocket, so because it gives you a little bit more flexibility, a little bit more freedom to be able to direct you know, what you need to direct in order to maximize the opportunity. And so when you look at the fact that, you know, 10 years ago, you know, mainly the families that are exercising, you know, private education in North Carolina were families who could afford to write, you know, a $5,000 to $10,000 check each year or more to send their child there. We had a cap on public charter schools, Mark, so you were pretty much, we were pretty much set there. And, you know, if you're a family who's utilizing the public school model, if you're not comfortable with your school that you're zoned to, which you'll find is many families will, even within a county as prominent as big as Wake County, they will move from, say, North Raleigh to, say, Cary, North Carolina, because, you know, they're saying that the schools are there. And even those families that are moving in, Mark, who have paying jobs, if you will, if they have school-aged kids, two questions they're going to ask. One is, how much is the house? And then the second question of thereafter will be, how are the schools? And so, you know, for your upper middle class to wealthy families, you had the ability to be able to exercise and utilize various options in education. I think when you look at the fact since 2012, with the increase of public charter schools as a result of the elimination of cap, when you've seen a largest number of them spring up in the largest counties such as Wake County and Mecklenburg County, and then when you look at the two, you know, school choice programs where they're actually focusing in on the particular population, you know, the Opportunity Scholarship Program deals with families of low-income working class families. They are eligible for a scholarship to attend a private school. And then when you look at the other private school options, special needs, I think what we can say is finally kind of that working class family now have the opportunity to be able to exercise choice, where heretofore, because of maybe the lack of resources or geography, had not been the case. I think you're starting to see, particularly with the latest numbers here at Wake County, you're starting to see that more and more of those families, where it was more of a dream before, Mark, now this is the new reality, and they are very much investing in exploring these options.
Our guest is Daryl Allison, president of Parents for Educational Freedom in North Carolina, here on What Matters in North Carolina. Take me back to the early days of your involvement, Daryl, in the school choice movements, as it were. What prompted you to get involved and now find yourself leading an organization dedicated to educational freedom?
Yeah, I appreciate the question, Mark. We're over 11 years. And so when we started, Mark, in July 2005, officially as the nonprofit organization, we had no staff, didn't really have resources. I'm a product. I'm a homeboy. I'm from North Carolina, proud resident there, Kannapolis, North Carolina. Had good school, and one high school there, and so did well. And had parents who though they did not have a college degree, outside of God, education was second, and we were gonna get an education, and I appreciate that. I was fortunate enough, Mark, to go to law school and worked at the Department of Justice, Civil Rights Division, out of high school, out of college, and kind of was been involved in kind of government affairs. And so when I came back to North Carolina, there were some folks who talked to me about the state of things in education. And this is a powerful point, Mark, because I know there will be those who kind of look at this as a, you know, Republican issue, conservative issue, things of that nature. You know, we're nonpartisan. It's just the right issue, not necessarily a partisan issue. And at the time in 2004, this is what kind of got me. We started in 2005, but I had to really look at the data myself. In 2004, Mark, we had over 25,000 dropouts in North Carolina. In 2004, North Carolina, in terms of graduation rate, we're at the bottom quadrant in the nation. In terms of education. And when you look at a more personal level, when you look at the plight of African-American males at the time in 2004, for every 10 African-American males, only 4 got a high school diploma in 4 years. And so, you know, when you hear statistics like that, those who are here in North Carolina, you immediately start thinking about Compton, California, maybe some place in New York. North Carolina, where we're known for our great, you know, colleges and universities, which I'm a byproduct of. And so it's from that position, Mark, where I say, hey, you know, this is something that resonates with me, and how do we, and this is where we spend most of our time. The first 5 years of our effort, we were not here in Raleigh. We were all across the state. We're in the western part of the state, eastern part of the state, meeting with individuals, community leaders, parents, elected officials at the local level, and ultimately begin to connect with our state elected officials. And so it was a real grassroots kind of momentum build where we're now over 60,000 supporters strong and counting as a result of now some of the programs that have been passed. And so, you know, for the first 5 or so years, Mark, it was really just connecting a group across the state here, really analyzing the data, and really examining and hearing from them, you know, what they desired, and then strategically then connecting with their local representatives, particularly here at the state level. And, you know, we're very, very pleased. The elimination of cap on public charter school was a bipartisan effort. Over 97% of the General Assembly voted in support of elimination of cap on public charter schools. And at the time, Democrat Governor Ben Perdue signed that bill into law. And then when you look at the special needs private school bill, again, yes, we had Republican leadership in the House and Senate, but we had over 65% of Democrats who voted for that measure, and the Governor Perdue at the time did not veto that measure. And then when you look at the Opportunity Scholarship Program, yes, we've had 2 Republicans who were primary sponsors of that Opportunity Scholarship program, but we had 2 Democrats who were also primary sponsors of the Opportunity Scholarship Program. And so, you know, and then when you look at the families that are utilizing these programs today as a result of our efforts, it's very diverse, very diverse. And so, you know, that's kind of like North Carolina. That's the way to go. It's not about necessarily getting something, but also oftentimes we want to analyze how we go about getting something done. And I think we're in a good place, Mark. I think the hard work is paying off, and now we just want to make sure that, you know, we're working now harder, more than ever, to make sure that our options are the highest of quality of options for our families.
Our guest is Daryl Ellison. Of course, he's the president of Parents for Educational Freedom in North Carolina, very passionate about North Carolina offering choice to parents and their families and their children when it comes to education. A lot of people don't understand, Daryl, that charter schools are, in fact, public schools, and they are funded much in the same manner as the traditional public schools, although there has been some wrangling going on about how much funding, and Bill made it almost through the General Assembly last session, but failed at the last moment, which would have given even more money to charter schools out of the appropriation that comes down for them that they are sharing with the local school districts. There seems to be a pushback on the part of some, and I would call them, you know, maybe the extreme left educational elite. They don't seem to like the whole concept of charter schools. They don't like at all the concept of opportunity scholarships. What do you think is going on? If it's really all about the children, it seems like these are ideas that are, in many cases, working. Why do folks seem so vigorously opposed to anything that rocks the status quo in education?
Well, you know, it's listen, I mean, Mark, I hate to say it, but, you know, we make a living. when you work for a public charter, public school only kind of advocacy organization, or when if you're head of the teacher association, right, it's kind of like, you know, first and foremost, we've got to protect our territory. We've got to mark off our space of the land, and come hell or high water, we're going to defend it. you know, and it's kind of hard to, you know, collaboration and thinking outside the box for some is more of a thing than doing. That being said, Mark, and this is why we're really excited about the article that you mentioned in News and Observer, because I think it's a telling piece. So last year this time, the reporter, Kern Huey, did a story. It was a smaller story where he talked about, oh, my goodness, he reached out to me and said, Daryl, I'm picking up that there's been more enrollment in our non-traditional schools than our public schools, you know, with homeschool, private school, and public charter school. And so he did that story. Again, it was a smaller piece there, and some of the elites kind of poo-pooed it. Oh, it's just new, you know, public charter schools are coming on scene. So, you know, it's kind of like a one-time thing. Well, as you mentioned, you know, not only was it a Sunday edition, but it was front page Sunday edition, where those numbers have grown even more, where you had, again, a stronger enrollment, higher numbers of enrollment in your homeschool, private school, and public charter school than the traditional public school system. And so, you know, it's a matter of, and when you look at the numbers that are rolling in for the Opportunity Scholarship Program, Mark, we're nearing 23,000 applications since 2013.
Wow.
We haven't gotten into a solid 3 years yet, and then half of those years was on a legal cloud. And so there is no denying that there is a great disconnect. Yes, we have our special interest groups, and they're here, and they do their job here in Raleigh. I could just tell you, when we get out into the rest of the state, the other 99 counties, if you will, particularly away from here, from Capitol, as I said to someone the other day, you know, the conversation that's being had at the special interest table, the legislative table, is very much different than the conversation that's being had at the family table. At the family table, no one is denying that we need to do more for our public schools in terms of funding, and I think we're on a trajectory to do that. But they're also saying, no, no, no. We're also saying that we also want more educational options. We want to be empowered to be able to decide, along with educators and things of that nature, we want to be able to be empowered to decide what the best education will be, you know, for our children in the K-12 system.
Well, Daryl, one thing that always kind of makes me scratch my head, I used to work at the General Assembly, and I would walk between the two buildings down there, and you can't help but see the Department of Public Instruction, and I would think about the literally billions and billions of dollars that gets funded and appropriated by the General Assembly, taxpayer money, to go to public schools. And then you read things like when juniors and seniors are close to graduating and they go into or they actually graduate and they go into a university or a community college. And I've been in committee meetings where representatives from the community college system and the university system have said that their number one problem is that incoming freshmen can't read at grade level. And it makes me scratch my head and go, what the heck are they doing with all of that money, and kids are graduating and they can't read? This is, to me, very problematic. And I think maybe you would agree or disagree, but I think this is part of what's fueling this demand for choice, is that parents are recognizing that something is not right when these kids are getting out of school and can't read.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And here's the thing. You know, Mark, I have two girls, and I'll be in this place where I'm having to make some decisions here, you know, economically, you know, when they get to the college level. And it's costly. You know what I mean? Not only is the realization, Mark, that you just explained here pretty frightening, but it's even more alarming when the fact that you're paying for it. You know, you got a kid coming in here, right, who's got A's and B's in the public school system, only to find that when she is now matched up against, you know, Mark in California and Daryl in New Jersey, oh, my goodness. You know, really A's and B's are really C's and C-minuses, maybe D's.
Wow.
And because what we're seeing here, nearly 50% of that population, so even the ones who graduate and goes to college from North Carolina and community college, almost 50% of them have to take some remedial courses in some way. So now a four-year degree or trajectory is now 5 to 6 years. And so, you know, so if that's where it's at, think about this, Mark. If that's the state of things at the higher level, this is some of the best, if you will, how much more challenging for those families that are in a different zip code, impoverished zip codes in our state? You know, what are the state of things in terms of the quality of education for them? And so, again, I think all of this speaks to, again, you know, you look at the numbers, when you look at the fact that in our largest school district in the state of North Carolina, 2 years in a row, more families are electing to explore, investigate, and enroll their children in non-traditional public schools as compared to the traditional public school system. I think that's something that says a lot on many different levels. And I think it's healthy because one of the on the back end, Mark, because we never want to take the position of us versus them, although we'll have to continue to work at that because there will be those who make their living living in that kind of space. But we're not going to allow that to happen. We're going to continue to press. And what we're seeing now is even, you know, the great Wake County School District are looking at ways for some of the lower performing, you know, public schools in the system. They're looking at ways and making some changes. Two of the lower performing public schools, Mark, are converting into a charter-like school. And there's no doubt about it. I do believe that as a result of some of the advancements that we had in our private education school scholarship models, as a result of the elimination cap on public charter schools, that competition, that demand has now forced, particularly when you look at the enrollment numbers, has forced our system to kind of change. And I think it's a good change. We all know, Mark, that hardly ever we wake up in the morning, and you know you're 20 pounds overweight, you say, I'm going to take it upon myself to make something happen. Normally, it's a doctor. Normally, it's a family member to say, hey, unless you change your ways here, it's not going to look good for you. You know, that external pressure, if you will, is a good thing if you really capture it and respond to it in the right way. The byproduct of that, Mark, will be that for families now, this is the great utopia, I guess. You know, what we want to have is a situation that families are scratching their head trying to make the best decision out of a lot of good options. You know, so whether it's traditional public school, you know, public charter school or scholarship, you know, private education, you know, we want it to be a situation where it's a harder decision to be made, and not an easier one in a lot of ways. So, you know, more quality options you have for families, we believe the better we're going to be able to educate this generation.
Our guest is Daryl Allison, having quite a pleasant conversation here on What Matters in North Carolina. He's the president of Parents for Educational Freedom in North Carolina. Regarding opportunity scholarships, I wanted to get your thought on this. Some of those who oppose the program do so saying, well, there's no control on where this money is going. Perhaps a student might enroll in a private school that is Muslim-based, or others who are concerned about discrimination might say that some private schools might refuse entry to students who don't fit their particular ideology or doctrine or faith or whatever. Are these issues that are enough to give you pause, or do the overwhelming benefits, as you see them from the opportunity scholarships, make that something that, you know, people are just going to have to put up with?
Yeah, Mark, nothing is ever 100% purist and great and all of the above. I think all of us, you know, you have 100 people in a room, you have 101 different opinions or criticisms about whatever they're analyzing. And so no one is saying that the Opportunity Scholarship Program is the end-all, be-all, the silver bullet to solve all issues. What we do know is that the Opportunity Scholarship Program is a pathway for a population of families in our state who have decade after decade been zoned to schools that are disproportionately unsafe, disproportionately inferior as it relates to academic education. When you look at the data and you see, regardless of what subject matter you look at, you see from an income level threshold the greater percentages of those that are failing, the greater percentage of those that are behind are your low-income families in the state of North Carolina. And so we cannot say that our Constitution is living up to its greatest, that regardless of your zip code, I know President Buchanan is saying this year, regardless of zip code, you know, you too can have a good education. It's a constitutional right here in North Carolina, where it's just not been right for far too long for low-income families. So when we have the Opportunity Scholarship Program, when you look at the kind of robust numbers that I shared with you with 23,000 applications, we have over 6,000 in the program this year, and another 2,000 mark that's on the waiting list, unfortunately, will not be able to utilize that program. The ones that have been discriminated for far too long have been low-income families in the state of North Carolina. That's where the focus is. That's where our primary target has been. That being said, even though you may have a $4,200 scholarship, which is what it is for tuition under the Opportunity Scholarship Program, does that mean that you can go to any and every private school in the state and force them to accept you? One of the things we wanted to make sure in this program, in this statute, is that we want to make sure that these private schools have their admission standards. It may not be the right school fit for a child that has a scholarship because of maybe there's a particular bent, a particular focus of education. Maybe it's more STEM focused. Maybe this child is not so strong in that area, more so in the literary aspect. You have some religious base. Private schools, the vast majority of our private schools in the state of North Carolina are religious based. And so, for those institutions of faith that have now started private education, if you will, that's a core structure in their educational pursuit. We need to honor that. We need to respect that. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, particularly when you look at our university system of old, and you look at many of our fine universities are built off of that kind of religious-based platform. And so, I think it's another attempt, as you well know, Mark, some of your listeners know, that our opponents immediately when the program was legislated, then immediately sought lawsuit, and we had to overcome a bunch of injunctions just to keep the program going. And now that the Supreme Court has ruled that this program is constitutional, you have those who will look for other ways to kind of come at the program. My position is, my goodness, can we just allow these people, let them be free? Give them a chance to find that education that's going to work for their child. And so we'll continue to monitor. We'll continue to fight. Mark, we're not done, and I mean this here. We want to make sure that we don't just have options, whether we're talking about public charter schools or private schools. We're going to make sure, to the best of our ability, at least this organization is going to make sure that the options that we have that may be of choice, we want to make sure that they're the highest quality. And so when we may have to do some tinkering, some changes here or in public charter schools, we need to do that because, again, we want to make sure that our families have quality options across the board, and we're meeting the needs for the majority of families.
Our guest, Daryl Allison of North Carolina Parents for Educational Freedom. Now, you mentioned this was bipartisan. I thought I'd let you know that we had Representative Cecil Brockman on the program a while back from Guilford County, and he made the statement something to the effect of, I'm tired of people that look like me, meaning African Americans, getting the short end of the educational stick. We were talking about the pilot program to allow something different to go on with just five schools across the state, allowing them to be run by charter companies and this sort of thing. I think you're right, Daryl. There is it doesn't matter, race or party. People just want what's best for their children.
Yeah, and again, as much as we can have Republicans and Democrats alike, kind of getting away from the political posture. I get it. Politicians, you got to run for office, and things of that nature. But there's just some things that just doesn't have to be so political. And I think for far too long, particularly here in North Carolina, education, unfortunately, has been more political focused than anything else. And I think we're beginning to kind of chip away at that, Mark, to where, we're going to be more honest. And so I salute Representative Brockman and others that are taking that position to really square this up the right way. And I think we're on a good trajectory here. My hope and goal, Mark, is that by the time that my 10-year-old, 6-year-old are adults, and they may reside here in North Carolina, that they'll look back in history and say, man, what were you guys talking about? You know, because for them, it's just a normal way of life. You know, that it's not a big deal that you're using the public charter schools for the first 3 years for your child, and then you're using, you know, the private school and maybe, you know, traditional public school. You know, I think that's the place that we're all striving for. And again, mainstreaming it and being a part of K-12 education as we know it, yes, it's a ways and an uphill battle to get there, but I think once we get there, North Carolina will be even a stronger state in our nation as a result.
Well, Daryl, thank you so much for being our guest here on What Matters in North Carolina. I appreciate your passion. You obviously are committed and believe in what you're doing, Parents for Educational Freedom in North Carolina. What is your website so that if any of our listeners are interested in what you're doing, they can find you on the Internet?
Yeah, thank you so very much, Mark, to be with you and your listeners here. Our website is Parents for Educational Freedom in North Carolina. So it's simply P as in parents, E as in education, F as in freedom, NC.org, PEFNC.org.
Right. Well, we will encourage people to visit that website and hopefully find information that will be helpful for them in exercising their rights for school choice for their children here in North Carolina. Daryl, thank you very much. Have a great Labor Day weekend and stay dry.
you do the same. Thanks so very much.
All right. Thank you, sir. Daryl Ellison, really passionate about what he's doing. And you know, folks, there's no denying that the choice movement in North Carolina is exploding. And I will tell you this, that the folks over in the General Assembly, I don't think would be appropriating $10 million more every year for the next 12 years to fund opportunity scholarships if there were not demand for them. And there are people, you just heard Daryl say, 20-something thousand applications. People want something different, something better for their children. And what does this say? Not to be negative, not the end of the show on a negative note here, but what does this say about the traditional public school system here in North Carolina? You can have folks, education elitists, talk about how great it is and what they're trying to do for the children. But the bottom line is something is wrong. We talked about how kids are graduating, not being able to read. They're having to get help at the community college and college level as freshmen to get up to speed, to be able to read at grade level. And these kids are going all the way through the system here in North Carolina and are finding themselves ill-prepared when they go to college. And so organizations like Parents for Educational Freedom in North Carolina are, you know, showing people that, hey, there are alternatives, homeschooling, charter schools, which, by the way, are public schools. There are opportunity scholarships. If you decide that trying to put your child in a private school is the way that you want to go. So we appreciate Daryl Allison being our guest here on What Matters in North Carolina. Also, thanks to Representative John Bell, the new House Majority Leader in the North Carolina House of Representatives. Had a nice conversation with him. Also today, Governor McCrory and his staff have reminded people don't drive through standing water as over the next day or so, we're going to be getting a lot of rain from the tropical storm. So please be safe out there this Labor Day weekend. We hope that you have a great time with your friends and your family. We will look forward to being with you on Tuesday. We'll be talking with Dr. Andy Taylor. Now that Labor Day has come and gone by that time, what do we expect in the upcoming election? As I like to call it, it's on. You've been listening to What Matters in North Carolina. My name is Mark Shiver. Don't forget you can follow us on Twitter @WhatMattersNC. Have a great Labor Day weekend, and we'll be back Tuesday.